This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio. Now let's meet a former venture capitalist who took the time to visit public schools in all 50 states. His assessment, the testing, has gotten out of control, but the teachers are the real innovators. Ted Dinnersmith's latest book is called What School Could Be.
One of the big issues, and I learned about this in spades and heard from so many people, we impose these obsolete metrics, these measures that really don't tell us much about the potential of kids, onto our schools, onto our teachers, hold them accountable, put those in the monthly magazines in a community. And they really don't foster the types of skill sets and mindsets that kids are going to need going forward. And they send a daily, I think, offensive message to teachers that we don't trust you.
Well, as you and I are speaking, there are public schools across the country that are doing standardized tests. And you think that that's going to come up with a measure, the results of those tests that don't really help us prepare people, huh?
Right. I when people tell me they believe in the test mindset, and I run into a fair number of those people, typically almost exclusively non-educators, I say, go look at the questions. Go online and look at some of the questions and ask yourself, does this have anything to do with my adult life? Are these even well-posed questions? They are not, particularly with the state-mandated tests. And so when you look at that and you say we're holding schools, students, teachers accountable to things, we owe it to them to make sure we're holding them accountable to something thoughtful, something that matters to kids as adults. And I think we're falling short on that.
So we should still measure, but we got to measure something different.
Well, I distinguish between assess and measure. So you're in the world of journalism. If somebody wanted a job with you, if they sent you a portfolio of their work, you could assess it. You would know whether they were really good or not. If they sent you a number based on a multiple choice test about when the New York Times first published, you'd know nothing. But we impose on our schools a lot of the latter and very little of the former.
But we have to assess. In other words, we have to know if what we're doing in a classroom is working.
Right. And I write about things from the classroom level where I see these amazing things from kindergarten through college. But I also write about thoughtful next generation assessments and talk particularly about what the state of New Hampshire did. Competency-based, performance-based, very thoughtful, great 8-year transformation across all their schools. And anecdotally, when I travel to New Hampshire and give talks to audiences, the best questions I get are from public high school kids in New Hampshire. So something there is working.
In other words, we could do a double-blind study. I could get some high school students from around the country. You'd be able to pick out the smart ones from New Hampshire.
I believe all kids have tremendous potential. So it's not so much smart versus not smart. It's more how do you engage with the world around you, with what you're hearing? Are you actively encouraged to generate your own thought-provoking questions? Or are you valued and rewarded as a student for memorizing the content and saying it back? And too often in schools, it's the latter, the memorize and say back. And it's really aligned with, matches with the state-mandated assessments, the ACT, the SAT, the AP exams, which are really largely, you know, memorize, replicate low-level procedures, follow instructions, say it back.
This is about improving schools so we end up with thinking people. But, you know, the workplace is changing radically. One of my beats is covering the effect of robots, technology, machine learning on jobs. Nobody argues there won't be profound changes in the American workforce going forward. But there are major questions about how we're preparing people for that workforce.
And I obsess about this. I mean, I live my life in the innovation sector. What is very hard for anybody to understand is what exponential growth means. And so when I read these studies or reports that tell us X percent of the jobs will be gone by Y year, I often say the people writing it either should be entrepreneurs if they really know, because I don't think they do, or they should be a lot less specific. The one thing we do know is within a decade or two, every routine job will be gone in the economy. And that our kids coming out into the workplace will have to invent and create distinctive and often rapidly changing ways they can make a contribution to their organization, to their neighborhood, to their community. And preparing a kid for that world is a very different challenge versus preparing them to master certain levels of content. And so to draw a sort of geography metaphor, it's like instead of having kids run down a fixed path, we need kids to be good at orienteering, plopping them into the wilderness and figuring out a way to move forward that's productive. And that is just a totally different set of challenges. And what I write about are learning environments, teachers, principals who create environments that embrace ambiguity, let kids define distinctive ways to make progress on it, hold them accountable to whether something they do is really interesting, constructive, has a result intended, versus just march through prescribed content, memorize, go to the bookstore and buy your AP flashcards, study, 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 say it back, and then honestly, within weeks or months, it's gone.
But to bring you back to one of your central points, this is happening in some schools. It's not a school of the future that we'd like to aspire to. You've seen it.
I've seen it. It's every. I use the phrase everywhere and nowhere. And I talk about, you know, one of my friends is Pasi Sahlberg, who was a person really responsible for reimagining education in Finland. Pasi says, we didn't come up with the ideas. The United States did. We just did them. And so it's out there. It's just if those innovative teachers are viewed as outliers or quirky or alternative or for those kids, instead of inspiring and engendering innovation across all of our schools and classrooms, it will not reach enough kids in a timely enough period to save them from an environment that can be very ruthless if all you're good at is following instructions and taking on challenges that are put in your inbox.
Who's policing what you would regard as the ineffective status quo? I mean, is it school administrations? Is it parents? Is it teachers' unions?
It's a complicated, intertwined ecosystem. And so there are a lot of different elements that come into play. Education is one of the few sectors, maybe the only one in our economy or our society where non-experts tell experts what to do. And I'm well aware of the fact that I'm a non-expert saying that, but I'm really saying we need to trust our teachers, trust our educators to lead the way, as they did in New Hampshire, even in generating and rolling out next generation assessments. A lot of people, particularly people I meet with in businesses, will be very critical of teachers without doing their homework. They will say, if it's a unionized, you know, labor force, they can't possibly, you know, innovate. I find remarkable innovation going on in our public schools. The people I know in the unions are very leaning in on this. I mean, there are these stereotypes we apply in education that just aren't well-founded. And I think that's one of the things that helped me in terms of kind of immersing myself and visiting so many schools and talking and listening, is you develop a more nuanced and I think a far more accurate perception of what really is going on in our schools and recognizing that if you hold schools accountable to failed and obsolete measures, it's very difficult for them to break ranks and do things that are great for their kids. And if we start to loosen up on how we, you know, start to roll out more informed assessment frameworks, start to trust teachers more, there's a lot of pent-up innovation in our teaching force. These kids are just itching as all get out to make a real difference in their world. So I believe we're right at the brink where it could happen, but I think it's important we start making those changes because machine intelligence isn't going to sit around and wait. You know, other countries aren't going to put things on pause. You know, so there's urgency here.
Mr. Dinnesmith, I have to ask you, what about the role of choice and competition in all this? If some schools are figuring this out, does it follow that giving parents choice of where to send the kids would help nurture the schools that figure out these innovations?
You know, the track record for choice policies has not been good. You know, it didn't work in Milwaukee. I've spent a lot of time in Milwaukee and didn't work in Sweden. You know, and my takeaway is that if you give parents and families choice among different obsolete schools, that's not a helpful thing. If the choice dynamic is driven by test scores, you'll see these schools that often get a lot of money from well-off people who ought to know better that just grind their kids into submission to show some sort of gains on test scores. Those aren't healthy environments for the kids. Those aren't preparing kids for a dynamic, innovative world. And so until we have a more nuanced and more informed view of what constitutes a great education environment, I think those are distracting issues instead of helpful issues.
Ted Dinnesmith's latest book is called What Schools Could Be. You may remember his documentary film from 2015, Most Likely to Succeed. Mr. Dinnesmith, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.